We are broadcasting on the unceded Musqueam territory of the Coast Salish people. This is Devil's Face with your hosts, Kat
and Titin.
And today we have Jan on.
Hi.
To talk about food. Food and quality of life are deeply linked to the accessibility of food in our surrounding spaces and defined through the relationship between our cultural settings and food. Today we're going to be discussing food and how it relates and affects the spaces that are around us. This is Devil's Face. I'm going to kill him. Slow, make niggas suffer. You know what I'm saying? A man said life ain't easy. When niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. Streets be all like feed me, feed me. When niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. My man said life ain't easy. When niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. Streets be all like feed me, feed me. When niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. My man said life ain't easy. Niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. Hey, he had a whole lot of cheese. Plus he was a Mac, had a whole lot of C's. Made a lot of his fat, gave a whole lot of G's. Grams, man, he had a whole lot of these. And he would let you hold like a whole lot of keys. Even if you lose some, he would give you new ones. Twice the bread, it's like he had two buns. And he had a whole lot of C's. Even his kids had meals, for real. Some rich small fries wrapped in paper since they was lil. Catch up. My man said life ain't easy. Niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. Streets be all like, feed me, feed me. When niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. My man said life ain't easy. When niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. He was a heartbreaker and a law shaker. If it was about caking, he was a partaker. International, he would take trips. Bon voyage, that's a hard. He was fishing for the chips. So greedy, never gave to the needy. That's what some say. The way he shunned all the bums hanging in the subways. You call him food to laugh at him. Delivery man on the pickup, drive through and throw a bag at him. And it was hard to understand him sometimes. Making the killing the way he had him standing in line. Like, my man said life ain't easy. When niggas gotta eat, that's what they get greasy. Streets be all like, feed me, feed me. When niggas gotta eat, that's what they get greasy. My man said life ain't easy. When niggas gotta eat, that's what they get greasy. Lovers call him king, haters call him clown. He would say, bite me, that's the way it's going down. He was having thoughts that maybe he should retire. Went to church on a Sunday and saw a deep fry. Said he had beef and people want him dead. He loved the hungry ones, was only scared of the feds. He lived a fast life, couldn't get his path right. Fry just told him about the hooters that he had last night. Turn yourself in to the paddy wagon, said no. Bacon wouldn't take him, had the pigs on the payroll. Yeah. My man said life ain't easy. Niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. Streets be all like, feed me, feed me. When niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. Hey. My man said life ain't easy. Hey. Niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. Hey, to be continued on another menu. You did, you did. Will he give up his life of crime, or will he stay? This and other adventures on Lupe Fiasco's next album, L-U-P, and... Yes, sir! My man said life ain't easy. When niggas gotta eat, that's when shit get greasy. Hey.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Food is just another need in your life.
It's another need that we realize is kind of a pleasurable thing that we can all enjoy together, though. So I find that that's why we have like these grandiose, I suppose, ceremonies for eating when you get the whole family together and you guys enjoy, I don't know, like a turkey on like Thanksgiving or something or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever you do on Thanksgiving. I love it.
Yeah. I think it's one thing that connects us all because no matter how different our cultures might be or the way that we live, every human on this planet needs to eat, so every culture has developed a certain type of cuisine or a certain type of cooking.
And I love that.
Is it like food is performance? Eating is performative.
And we all do it.
It's amazing. Yeah. And another social justice, like, or I guess this is not even like a social justice issue, but it's more like an environmental, like, issue with food is food waste, for example. I don't know, working in a restaurant, it's like very, it's a very, like, it's a thing that's always there, and you can always see that, like, people are wasting food, and, like, you can see the scraps and, like, the things that just don't get consumed at the end of the day, and it's very, like, it, like, breaks my heart. And understandably, like, you can't force someone to, like, eat all of the food that they have on their plate. Like, that's ridiculous. But, yeah. But yeah. Did you know that the most food waste occurs at home?
I was watching this video that was kind of talking about the study that was done that showed that people valued their food less once they'd actually purchased it and brought it home, which, I mean, I guess I can somewhat relate to as well, because if I have food sitting in my fridge for a week, I know it's kind of, it's not doing that great, and I don't really care if I let it sit for another few days and possibly have to throw it out, which is really bad. But, yeah, it's just, it's so easy to forget about it.
Yeah, and it happens to the best of us, because after you see the gross, like, reality that is, like, keeping your food in the fridge, and, you know, your celery's a little more limp now, and now, you know, your fruit's got, like, a few little spots on it that, like, you don't like so much, like, it makes it a lot more appealing to just, you know, throw it out and start from fresh, brand new fruit.
I almost feel like it's not even necessarily the shape of produce, but it's the fact that it has just entered our homes and now we have it. And now we're like, oh, well, I don't want it.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, buying groceries, it seems so dire in the moment. And that's why you buy it, because you're like, I need these nectarines or whatever. And then once they come home, you have a good thing. And you're like, why? Like, why did this happen to me?
Yeah. You see all the food that was already in your cupboards, or you just have food at home already. So...
Or then you bought, like, 9 nectarines, and then you eat one, you're like, I don't want any more, and now you have 9.
True. There's, like, a lot of these, like, harrowing videos or, like, just content that you see of grocery stores, food waste. Mm-hmm. You see, I don't know, like, dumpsters filled with just produce that's a few days from expiring, or packets of hummus that are, you know, not quite so good anymore, but still totally edible. Totally can see the appeal of freeganism. I respect freegans. Maybe one day. I just, like, don't know where to go to dumpster dive.
Also, just a little side note. I realized I said you have 9 nectarines, and then you eat one, and then you have 9. And then 8.
That's a classic second grade math question right there.
Yeah. So any second graders, the answer is 8. But yeah, freeganism.
Oh my God, what's up with
that? It's too much for me.
Yeah. But I will, because I did work at a grocery store for almost 3 years, and a lot of waste that goes out of grocery stores isn't necessarily even food that's gone off, just food that might not be as pretty as a consumer might want to buy.
I hate that.
Yeah.
I also worked at a grocery store, and the non-pretty food is still good.
Yeah,
it's still totally consumable, and yet, because it doesn't look pretty, it doesn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. Also, the Best Buy dates, food is often totally fine after them.
It's weird, though, because, like, I remember, I think it was, like, some kind of, like, video or something, but, like, basically, the reason why, like, grocery stores are always super stocked and, like, super packed with, like, food, not all that food is going to be sold, obviously, but it's just more appealing to the shopper to see that there's an abundance of food. Like, I get my pick of the best fruit because there's so many. I won't get the crappy one that's left over. Like, I'll get the best one.
You know what? I totally, because I, even just a few days ago grocery shopping, I saw a bunch of mangoes that were on sale, but because there were so few in the bin, I just kind of thought to myself, ooh, these must not be the good ones. I'll pass on them.
That's so funny, too, because it's like, obviously, if they're so taken, then, like, people have, like, jumped on it, you know? But I totally get that feeling, too, when I see less. I'm like, oh, well, I want a better choice.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of another thing that goes into food waste, because it's like, then you have to keep this food out for longer. And then it spoils faster, and it's like, well, frick.
To me, when you said that, I just was reminded, like, capitalism. But, like, it's just so much about excess. And the way that, like, grocery stores are even designed, it's these bright, vibrant-ass colors. that are super unnecessary, but it just makes you feel like you're in a whole totally different space that's very removed from real life. Like, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You would never see the kinds of interiors that are like within a grocery store in any other circumstance. Like, there's never going to just be like loads and loads of other stuff, and you can just walk through like this maze of things that you can like buy and are available to you for your consumption. And like, you know, I don't know, like maybe at a mall, but like that's again like another shopping instance.
That's kind of another theme that we kind of bring up a lot on this show, but just that idea that all places have a general utility and a general goal, and they're all completely centric, like down to the patterns on the floor and the music overhead. It's all designed just to make you buy and to make you, grocery stores specifically, are designed to make you walk fast through, but not too fast, not slow enough for you to think about all the prices and things too much, or if you really need that jar of jam, but not fast enough for you to feel stressed. Like, it's just the perfect sweet spot, and it's all so minutely crafted.
If you guys have ever noticed, a lot of the really common things that people need to buy at grocery stores, so milk, or I guess dairy, eggs, meat, the freezers that contain those are placed at the very back of a grocery store, so they get you to walk through the aisles of everything else. So as you're walking through to get what you originally came for, you probably end up picking out a lot more than you really needed.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I heard this is like some grocery store gossip. It was made aware to me at some point that like, I believe that produce sections are generally in the front because like they're the best sellers and people like, it's the most profitable for grocery stores. So they try to push it first. Like, mm-hmm. It's the first thing that you see.
Yeah, I mean, it's all very carefully plotted out.
Wow. Should have been on our conspiracy theory episode.
I also liked your point about the layout of where food was placed.
There's a lot of, like, hotly, I guess it's contentious, but certain products are placed in certain shelf heights that are more accessible to shoppers based on the amount of money that a product might pay for that coveted shelf space. So like, you know, sugary cereals that are more geared towards children are generally at lower like eye levels for like people, like smaller people, children, hello, to
smaller people
to buy. And then I don't know, like, you know, what do we got, like
bran.
Yeah, like disgusting. Oh, like it's just like within like adult eyesight, because like, you know, you gotta get your,
you need fiber.
Yeah, yes. Yep. Yeah, so we will cut to a song.
This song is, it's spelled A-E apostrophe A-E-A. So pronounce that how you will. And it's by Walgren. And you're listening to Double Space on CITR 101.9 FM.
Listening to
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Ice cream man, can I have this? I want this over here and a toast on by my father. And give me this ice over here and vanilla cone. Thank you, ice cream man. Thank you, ice cream man.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities.
They are doing this by developing gender-affirming, client-centered models of service.
Ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available.
And supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support.
Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for the trans members of our community.
Hey, we're back. We're talking about food on Double Space. Food and what it means to eat food and the society that we've built around food. So now we're going to get into culture and food.
So Kat, I know that you are a Jewish lady. Could you tell me a bit about traditional Jewish food or just that part of your culture?
Certainly, I would love to. So yes, I am a Jewish woman, and there are a lot of food-centric holidays in Jewish tradition. There are a lot of fried foods, which bears very well with myself and a lot of people. For Hanukkah, which is a celebration of It's kind of complicated. We escaped slavery, and then we had oil that was only supposed to last one night to, like, light candles with, but it ended up lasting 8 nights. And I guess to celebrate this excess of oil, we make potato latkes, which are basically potato pancakes pan-fried in oil. They're basically like a big circular French fry, and they are so delicious, like astoundingly delicious.
Word, I've had one before, never turning back.
I'd love to hear about your guys' histories.
Well, Jan and I are both Chinese.
Yes.
Correct. I'll let Jan go first. What has your experience with your culture been like with food?
I was really lucky growing up, I think, actually. My mom was a really good cook, and I remember for a lot of big holidays, we'd have a lot of family friends over, and in Chinese culture, it's always a very big, like, family-style feast that we do. And yeah, even just last summer, I went back to China to visit some relatives for the first time in a while. So seeing how pretty much every time we were to see another part of the family that we hadn't seen in a while, it was always, okay, we're going to go to this restaurant and we're going to have a huge feast. And that's just how we connected with one another, which is really nice because we're connecting over the food and about the food. And yeah.
I very much relate to that because, yeah, it's like similar for me. Food in Chinese culture, I feel like, is generally just a time when people want to get together and just like spend time together and make a big, boisterous kind of celebration out of a thing that everyone does, which is getting together and eating and, you know, living your goddamn life.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, word. I feel like most of the times I've ever had family over was just for eating purposes and like solely eating. Everyone just gets together at this one house with 6 or 7 different families and all you guys just do is eat.
I remember, especially when I was younger, having all the adults sit around the table for literally 4 hours and still picking at their food after all that time. And as a kid, just thinking, How is this so fun for you? Why are you still doing this?
But no, I totally get you. That always happens. And then there's little snacks after food, fruit, and then there's sunflower seeds and little
dates and tea and just, it never ends.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm so with that. That sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I wish I appreciated it more as a kid. I was always like, why are you guys doing this? What is the point? But I'm honestly like, just eating is so sick. Mm-hmm. For real.
Just sitting around eating and enjoying things. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's the perfect excuse to socialize, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's fun now as well. Just my family, on my mom's side especially, they're super into the medicinal qualities of food. And when I was young, having my aunt giving me a little bowl of porridge saying, oh, this is going to make you beautiful or like whatever, give you a lot of energy. And just how there's so much tradition in that as well. I mean, food is medicine. I mean, it's what you take in is what your body creates and makes itself into. So
exactly. It's so crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and something that I find very contentious about Chinese food in general is the trend of the Americanization of Chinese food. I saw this TED Talk where this woman who is Chinese went back to China to search for General Tao, like General Tao's chicken or whatever. And when she found the person who invented the dish, it was a dish that was in homage to a person who's actually named General Tao. He was a military, like, general guy. But then when she showed that person who invented the dish a graphic depiction of what it's like in North America, the chef was like, this is not what I made. And it's interesting because it's just like all the things that Americans love. It's sweet, it's salty, it's fried. Yeah, it's chicken. Perfect. It's weird. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, that is pretty weird. Just stealing something.
I read some article saying something about not Chinese food, but pho is the new ramen and just people taking a specific type of cuisine and just making it. You know, it's not just some noodle dish. This is a cultural dish and you can't take its importance away from it like that.
Yeah, totally. It's like this weird Orientalism fetishization of food. It blows my mind because I just can't quite fathom what drives people to want to do this. But yeah, it'll be like sushi's super trendy or, you know, ramen is so trendy right now. And it's interesting because this is what people have eaten for thousands and thousands of years. This is just what they do in everyday life. But now we have to make some kind of ploy to market it to everyday North American people or like whatever.
That is so true. It totally is just Orientalism of something so easily consumed. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most crazy part to me is you're othering these people by saying, oh, look at this odd new food that we just found, and you're literally consuming it, you know?
It's so weird, though, because when you say that, it reminds me of when I was in elementary school and, like, I would bring weird food to school. Like, oh, my God, rice. Even that was weird to kids in the first grade or whatever. And being so like, oh, God, this is so awful. What I have is so disgusting. No one will ever love me. And then realizing that now people are like, oh, my God, that's so crazy that you eat blah. And it's like, well, I mean, I don't eat, you know, steamed vegetables and, you know, unsalted chicken at home or, like, whatever. I don't even know. Sorry, that's awful. But you know what I mean?
Spoonfuls of mayonnaise.
Oh, God. Yeah, but, you know, and I feel like back then I was scrutinized for it and I felt so ashamed to be, you know, I was very obviously not from Canada. That, even that defining moment, you know, lunchtime in like first grade, knowing that I wasn't part of this whole picture was the earliest, like one of the earliest moments where I could realize that I was like not quite right. I felt kind of othered.
That's yeah. Really sad.
Those two cases of being othered in a bad way and then being othered in a good way in the trend sort of aspect are so similar.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, just like air quotes bad and air quotes good.
There's this really good podcast. I know we're on a podcast, but we're going to talk about another podcast.
Oh, yeah.
It's called The Racist Sandwich, and they kind of talk about issues with race and food. And there was one in particular where they were talking about how when it comes to these kind of ethnic foods, people, especially like food bloggers, that's such a big thing now online where you can find recipes for, oh, easy veggie curry or whatever, but they can't separate the fact that it is an ethnic food from just any, like another type of food, I guess. When you're taking a picture of pasta, you'll just, you know, it'll just be like spaghetti on a plate and that's fine. But when a lot of food bloggers or cookbooks will show, I don't know, a curry with spices sprinkled around the edges or Chinese food with chopsticks and certain things decorating it because it is different and it's something exotic and special.
And that's like a weird thing because they have to like make such a big deal about it. When, I mean, it makes it ultra uncomfortable because it's so obvious that it's not from here. And then the people who tend to like popularize these foods by making them trendy in North America just very obviously make it so that the reason why it's trendy is because it's not from here and that it's exotic or whatever.
Yeah, and I think that aspect of like it has to be called, you know, whatever the dish, it has to be called like a curry is interesting too. You can't just say use rice noodles and then just like acknowledge that you're making your own dish and that it's not culturally the same, you know? It seems like you mix some vegetables and stir fry them and then you're like, oh, this is this certain Thai dish. No, it's not. You just came up with that. You have no idea what you're doing.
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kat is with it. And another thing, while we're talking about North America and food, something that I find really interesting is North American food culture. Fast food culture I find especially interesting because in Asia, fast food is so popular and it's such a luxury to go to McDonald's and get a bunch of chicken McNuggets and like, fries because it's expensive there for one. It's more costly than it is in North America for sure. And it's just interesting because like, why is it such a popular export to other parts of the world? What is it about McDonald's that makes people love it?
It plays right exactly into what we're just talking about. It's the glorification of the West.
It's funny how I think at this point, or at least I guess where we are in Vancouver, fast food, it's looked at the completely opposite way, right? And also it isn't doing any good for our culture either. But
yeah, it's kind of disgusting. McDonald's is making this food. They know it's bad and they know it's going to kill people, but yet they allow it to be glorified.
Just like fast food culture in general, it's bright, it's beautiful, it's there, it's accessible, and it's kind of cosmopolitan to certain people in different parts of the world. I don't know, the last time I went to China was so long ago, but like even then I remember there was all these really cool things about McDonald's. The fact that it came in this really clinical looking container, it was very clean and cut and dry. It was very unique to just fast food in general. So yeah, anyway, that's interesting to me.
And another thing, I guess, with North American food culture, the portioning of foods, or even the difference between Canada and the U.S., which I don't know. I mean, I haven't really spent much time in the U.S., but I was in Australia for a bit last year with a huge group of people that were mostly from the U.S. And I just remember this one time we went to this Mexican food place and we got burritos and everyone was just freaking out at the fact that their burrito like wasn't the size of their head and that they didn't get free chips and salsa and cheese with their meal and just how can you live like this where that was just like ridiculous even to me.
As someone from the States, it's just amazing how much food you get in one typical serving. The cups at McDonald's are huge in the States and gallon gulp sizes and just huge plate sizes. And when I got to Canada, I was so relieved because I was like, finally, I don't have to eat all of this food because I feel usually when I'm eating out, I feel like I have to clean my plate and it's a chore in America if you listen to your body and you try to eat the actual amount that you're served, because you're served way too much and you're just, you don't think about it, and then you eat it and your gut feels horrible, but you just go through it because that's what you do. But it's so great to be away from that.
Word. For a while, like, it seemed to me that, like, automation of, like, food would be, like, what the world would be, like, gearing towards in the future, just to, like, be more efficient. But I want to ask, like, what do you think the food of the future will be?
That's interesting that you say automation, because, I mean, I guess that's probably right, but what that made me automatically think of was that non-automated food is going to become a luxury, even more so. I mean, it already sort of has in a way. You know, instead of dining out, there's a huge difference between dining out to McDonald's and dining out to some huge fancy restaurant, you know, and that the people supposedly in the fancy restaurant are making this food.
Mm-hmm. And another thing with automation as well, fast food culture kind of, in a way, created automation. There's this term, McDonaldization, which stems from just how McDonald's, the fast food chain, kind of, not invented, but really took, automating, having a certain group of people good at one specific task and having that assembly line type of production allow us to create really cheap food really quickly and have it, yeah, accessible to many people. However, that hasn't been really good for our food system, at least in the past till now. But who knows? Maybe it'll change in the future. Maybe if we can turn that into a good thing, that can help us to bring food in the future in a healthier, more accessible way.
Yeah, word. We can make our automation systems for good, I hope.
Probably.
Yeah, let's say so.
Hopefully. Maybe we'll all just forget how to make food.
Yeah.
Except word. How to, like, wash lettuce or cut a carrot.
just one
we'll
carrot.
We'll only know one thing.
Yes. Food of the future to me is, like, when you think of, like, the really crazy, like, 60s or like 70s depiction of, like, what, you know, the turn of the century food would be like. So it's like food that's like in a tiny little pill, and that's like all you need to eat for the day, and you're like good to go. But now we have something that's kind of similar, like Soylent. A lot of my coworkers, or a couple of my coworkers, dabble in Soylent, and I think it's, I don't know, it just turns like eating into a chore, which it kind of like technically like is, because like you do need to like eat to like survive and like, you know, go about your day, but like it turns it into, like, another step further where it's just like, okay, like, I gotta, like, take my Soylent this morning. Like, I don't know. It just sounds so, like, scary.
I mean, I know that Soylent, of course, is a brand that makes drinks that are fortified with all your nutrients that you're supposed to need in a given, I don't know, course meal that you're supposed to take 3 times a day. So you'll get your full dose of nutrients. But I know that they also have, like, a bar that you can eat, pretty similar to a protein bar. So if drink seems too, like, unrelatable, they also have, like, protein bar equivalents. But I don't know. I mean, protein bars, too, are also so common. And, like, I get it.
You get
it.
In a way,
I get, because I often just kind of forget to eat because I like to cook a lot, and so I find that I spend a lot of time cooking, and I always want to make food that is just good and healthy, and that takes a lot of time, so I often am caught off guard having not eaten in a while, so, you know, I'm super hungry and I go to protein bars.
I mean, I think protein bars, Soylent, that kind of thing is a great way if you're really busy to just kind of get some food in your system for a meal, maybe. Let's say you have a really busy day. But, and maybe this is just me, I love food, and it's really sad to me to think that we could just live our lives without enjoying a really delicious meal, if we could just satisfy all of our biological needs with soy milk.
Yeah, like, I don't know, it just makes, like, it takes all of the joy out of eating and, like, putting it into, like, this process that's, like, again, like, gotta take my Soylent this morning. Oh, gotta take it at noon, and then gotta go to bed and, like, take it. Yeah. Also, like, the motion of, like, chewing and, like, the texture of food is, like, so much of, like, the pleasure of just eating is, like, seeing it. Like, you eat with your eyes. Like, you see, like, a beautifully plated, like, whatever. Like, you have Soylent in, like, this container that's, like, nice, too, I guess. But, like, it's not the same. I don't know.
I feel split because I agree with that, but it would just be so amazing to, like, know that all your nutrients are fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I would just, especially as, like, a vegan mm-hmm. person, it's hard to, like, reach all those quotas. But also, one potential downfall of everyone relying on Soylent is that there's some weird nutrient in food that we missed that we suddenly all lack, and then humans are dead.
Yeah, that would be a problem. Yeah. I think, like, Soylent could be used for, like, good, though, because, like, if it's cost-effective enough, like, we could possibly, like, provide it as, like, an alternative for, like, food for, like, more low-income folks, maybe. Like, that could be possible, especially, like, if you're in, like, a pinch and, like, you know, you just don't have the time or the maybe, like, money to make, like, a really, like, you know, nice, like, home-cooked meal, like, and you can definitely get all the nutrients that you need through, like, this beverage. Like, I find that that could be a very, like, valuable, positive thing.
I love that. We should replace fast food with Soylent.
Yes.
And have the government subsidize Soylent instead of, you know, factory farming meat.
Yeah, I'm into it.
We solved world hunger. Let it be known.
Is Soylent, so everything Soylent is just soy, right?
I don't know.
Like soy-based?
It's all vegan.
Okay.
I know that much. Okay. I think it is, at least. I'm pretty sure it's gluten-free as well. It's pretty, like, allergy tall. Like, I think there's no nuts in it, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Is it organic as well?
I think it's a fair amount.
Or GMO,
I think it's, like,
or something.
70% organic or something.
Okay. Because that just soy, like, okay, I think it's something like 90% of all crops in America or something are dedicated to soy, wheat, and corn, something like that. So it just kind of makes me iffy having, you know, depending that much on a crop that's already so overexploited, I guess. And especially soy is something that's really, really either heavily genetically modified or they use a lot of pesticides or often both. Because I don't know if this is going to be kind of a bit boring, but the most famous GMO soybean, I believe, is, I forget what type of pesticide, but it is resistant to a certain type of pesticide. So that pesticide can be sprayed all over these crops without affecting the actual soybean crop, which ends up really, really affecting the environment and makes a ton of money for Monsanto or whoever owns that patent, but is really hard for farmers, actually, and really harsh on the environment again.
So just kidding, we did not solve world hunger. that's totally a very good thing to bring up because I definitely had that oversight. Just like in the, what is it, the industrial farming system is just, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. So we did solve world hunger, but the environment is gone.
Yeah, she's gone.
We live in deserts now. So, yeah, that's how we go out.
And on that note, we will cut to another song. And we will be playing Popsicles by Glad Rags right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Butter.
This bitch.
I'm not
listen.
Radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
But please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
Are you interested in Indigenous issues?
Are you down with decolonization?
Do you have something to say?
Or have a topic to share?
We have just the thing.
Join UBC's first ever Indigenous Radio Collective.
We're a team of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people.
I'm Niska from my mother.
From the Tahltan Territory.
I'm a settler from Washington State.
I'm from the Qualcomm and Musqueam First Nations.
I am Quechua Indigenous from Saraguro, Ecuador.
We broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land
of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Whatever you want to talk about, we're into it.
Everyone is welcome, no experience necessary. Unceded Airwaves airs Mondays from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Unceded Airwaves.
We want to hear your story.
And we're back, and you're listening to Double Space on CITR 101.9 FM. And we're talking about food with our dear pal Jan and what it means to eat it, to look at it, and why we do certain things. Now we're going to get into dietary preferences, just because we in the room all have a few dietary preferences that, you know what, people are always like, oh, like, why are you vegan? But they don't really care. But we're going to talk about it anyway, because you have to listen. So here's where we're going to get it out. This next part might be a bit graphic in terms of the things that happen in the meat industry and things like that, but we're going to be using as least graphic language as possible to describe these things. So if you don't want to hear it, feel free to skip to the end. We won't feel bad. And be sure to join us next time.
Yeah. So I know that you already alluded to this, but you and Jan are both resident vegans. I myself do not eat meat, but I consume dairy and eggs on occasion, so I'm not a vegan. So Kat and Jan, why have you guys chosen this as your food preference?
I stopped eating meat, I think, when I was 13, so almost 7 years ago now. The reason that I wanted to, I read this book, which I forget the name now, but it was actually all about veganism, not vegetarianism, and I stopped eating meat as a result, but I still ate dairy and eggs for a few years after that. But the biggest part at the time was because of all of the animal cruelty that I learned of. I was like a small little 13-year-old, like, in love with animals, just upset about why anyone could treat animals so badly, which is definitely still a reason now, the ethical reasons, but that was predominantly it when I was first starting out, researching about factory farms and just the way that these animals are, like, the conditions that they live in CAFOs, which are concentrated animal feeding operations, where you can literally have up to, like, literally a million chickens in one building, just like crammed together, and that kind of thing just didn't sit well with me. So that was, like, I guess the original reason that I stopped eating meat. And then slowly, I guess I learned more and more about it. And there are lots of reasons I would suggest not eating meat and possibly not eggs and dairy. But
so pretty much a lot of the stuff you said goes for me as well. I was vegetarian from about fifth grade on. I started puberty really early, and my doctor was like, well, you might be early, like an early bloomer, or it might be hormones in your meat. And I was like, what? And it messed me up so bad that I didn't want to eat meat ever again. And I think I started out just not eating red meat because that's the one that has a lot of bad hormones in it for the most part, but chickens are also fed those sorts of things, as well as antibiotics and things like that. And another thing that I've kind of hypothesized is that these animals are under incredible amounts of stress, and frequently feel a lot of trauma. And I just feel like there must be some sort of transference of those like stress chemicals into the meat that you then eat. Is that true?
Well, I'm not sure actually, but I'm sure there is a higher level of hormones. Yeah, I never really thought of that, but
yeah, because stress is a chemical thing.
Mm-hmm.
I should look into that. I also think that I thought that using another sentient being for purely nutritional reasons was just like ethically too much for me to think about. And there were alternative sources that I could get my nutrients from. So it felt malicious to kill this animal just so I could get nutrients when there's totally viable alternatives.
Another thing that has been more on the forefront recently, and another reason, I think a big reason why I also became vegan, just understanding that there are so many natural resources that need to go into producing meat that take away from the organisms, the ecosystems that could be there instead. And just for example, I think it's something like 32,000 gallons of water for a pound of beef. That could be completely off, but it is some ridiculous number like that. And also the fact that we need to feed these animals before they're feeding us. And right now, we are producing enough food on this planet to feed everyone, but so much of that food goes to feeding livestock that then becomes our food that it's compounded, but we're getting less and less out of it than we really could be.
And Tintin, you're vegetarian, so you can join in.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, the reason why I still eat dairy, despite the fact that I'm kind of lactose intolerant, I push through that pain, man. And I like to eat eggs because I don't really know how to like make a lot of food, and like eggs are pretty easy, dude. But I don't eat meat. It was hard for me to give up seafood though, because it's such a big like cultural thing. My family is born in a fishing kind of village in China, so my parents, like, all they like to eat is like fish. Like, I barely ate like red meat growing up. It was mostly fish. So that one's tricky because like it does like interfere with my standing with my culture, because I choose not to eat this thing that my parents both really enjoy and like it's really meaningful to them. Anyway, yeah, I don't eat meat for similar reasons. I mean, like, factory farming, messed up, not a good time. And also, I did it mostly for the environmental aspect of it. I've been doing it for 2.5 years now, almost 3. And at the beginning, I couldn't quite, this sounds so awful of me, but like, I couldn't quite level myself with an animal to be like, I know that treating animals in factory farms is awful and like, I totally understand, but I just don't know what being, I just couldn't even fathom it, that it almost didn't seem real to me, if that makes any sense. Anyway, but it was mostly for environmental concerns, and then being more enlightened on these, you know, animal rights issues, definitely not an understatement. Some of these depictions of artificial like insemination and like just the conditions and the, you know, dimly lit rooms with 9,000 like chickens and like 1 cubic meter space or something, like something ridiculous, and those guys aren't having a good time. No one's loving that. But yeah, that's why I'm a vegetarian.
It's definitely not an exact, pretty much anything you've heard about factory farms is probably true. They're repulsive, just completely disgusting. And that is what made me go vegan, actually, the artificial insemination, or I guess forced impregnation of cows so that they would produce milk, because they don't automatically produce milk on their own. You need to be pregnant so your body will create milk, and that's what does it. And I just feel like anything conceived of such a horrible process shouldn't be in my body. Like, I just feel that is just bad vibes. And I just don't want that in my body.
Yeah. And I, of course, want to clarify that these are personal dietary choices, obviously. There's so many reasons why someone wouldn't do either of these things, like be vegetarian or vegan, or like have any of these other restrictions. Anyway.
That's a great point. I definitely feel like the fact that I'm vegan is a very personal choice. And I understand completely when people say, some people give the excuse, like, I could never do that. And it's like, well, you probably could. But some people truly don't have the dietary ability. And I would never try to pressure anyone. I just wouldn't want to lead someone to that conclusion that they haven't found in themselves. And so, like, when I say that milk is bad vibes, I mean, just for me, from what I've learned from my research into that topic, I find it's bad, but I would never judge any culture for using it in their own practices.
And just another thing, all three of us are very privileged to be able to even choose what we can and don't eat, which not a lot of people can. And especially with the vegan health superfood trends that go on where you can probably drop $15 on a smoothie bowl. Yeah, which, you know, that's your choice that you make, and I will respect that, kind of. But, you know, you have to have a certain amount of money or be able to choose what you're eating to be able to say no to certain things.
There's definitely some people that really glamorize vegan life, and if you're not careful about it, it could really be just like so unfathomably expensive. But even on the kind of like regular tier veganism, it's still a very privileged ability to be able to take the time to look at your diet and really evaluate things. And that's a privilege that I'm really glad that I've been able to afford to be afforded.
Word. I agree. And to end things on a lighter note, not that veganism is not a light note, but we're going to be talking a little bit about art, symbolism, food, who knows? Kat, I feel like you got the reins on this one for the most part. I will ooh and ah as desired.
Ooh. Excellent. They're crucial. So in general, food as a symbol is often very closely linked with women for problematic reasons and otherwise, I suppose. I mean, they're all kind of problematic, but anyway. The more common, I guess, contemporary comparisons would be women and meat in sort of like Carl's Jr. commercials with like hamburgers and women like scantily clad. And this is obviously incredibly problematic because it's like what is being said is that this woman is so comparable to this piece of meat and these are two things that are just supposed to be consumed. And it's just really sickening to me, at least.
I think like there's just like a lot of weird imagery with the idea that you're comparing a human being to flesh, because I mean, they're both like, yes, like we are both made of like similar compounds, so to speak. It's just like kind of creepy to me. I don't know. Cause like one, you like people generally like actually eat, and then the other one's like a human being. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel the same way. I feel like, I don't know, just to compare a woman to something you just consume to, I guess, fix your, like, satiate your hunger for, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the consumption is what unites these two symbols of, you know, the symbol of a woman and the symbol of food. They're united by consumption, which is disgusting.
But I mean, on our notes here, we have something kind of sweet to me.
Yeah, this is the light part we were talking about. It's coming in just now. So in ancient art, both women and men and fertility in general was often represented through food. This is often better than the sort of contemporary angle. We were kind of thinking about it and we were like, what separates being compared to a burger from being compared to like an apricot or something? And I think we kind of situated that the difference was meat is just too close to what we physically are, and a fruit is a lot more metaphorical and is a lot more spaced out.
Yeah, like being compared to a peach or like some other, you know, lovely fruit seems like kind of beautiful and like metaphorical and like just like so far removed that you're like, I'm not a grapefruit, but I'm, you know, plump and beautiful like one. Like, yeah, you could say that. Yeah, whereas like being compared to like a slab of meat is like somehow just infinitely worse. But I mean, honestly, I just prefer to be not compared to anything from my personal standpoint and speaking. But I mean, I can kind of appreciate the grapefruit, like peach metaphor.
Yeah, it's still a little problematic because it's still an object to be consumed. So that still remains. But somehow it feels like there's less autonomy in like a slab of meat.
Yeah.
I think one other thing also is, because women, as women, our bodies are really objectified, really sexualized, except, I don't know, like when it comes to, I think it's really nice being able to compare, I don't know, a vagina to, can I say that? Okay, to compare a vagina with something beautiful instead of just gross or, you know, like, I think, I don't know, I feel like I've seen comparisons or, like, pictures. I think fruit is beautiful, and I feel like to be able to see the beauty in it is really nice as well, even if it, at the end of the day, if it still is an objectification in a way, but at least you're seeing it as something good.
Also, when you think about the diet of people in ancient times, like the 1600s-ish, rare food or fruit and fresh fruit especially was a very rare commodity. It was like very highly praised. It was very prized. And if you think back to the diet again, they didn't have nearly as much sugar as we have. And so something sweet and naturally occurring like a fruit was the closest thing they had. And so I don't know if you've ever not had like added sugar for like a few weeks and then you have like a fruit or something, it tastes like so amazing because that's your source of sugar. So it's like as much pleasure as we get from fruit, back then it was even more significant and even more important. So it's nice in that regard to be given so much praise, I would say.
Yeah. Word.
There's a bit more. There's really, I have been looking at this article for a little while explaining the foods in ancient cultures and ancient paintings and things, and really a lot of it is pretty obvious. Like, if you see, like, nuts, it's, you know. Yeah. Also, I saw something that was like a sausage hanging from some table. Like, you can jump to conclusions.
Yeah.
But there's kind of more innocuous things that are a little more metaphorical, such as eggs. Eggs are often represented as fertility, whereas cracked eggs are often about infertility. And pomegranates, as a fruit with a lot of seeds, is often seen as a very fertile fruit. And that really goes back to the ancient Greeks and Romans, who were really into spirituality with their food. And a few of their gods really centered around food, whereas all the other ones were about love and war and these really humanistic ideas. There were multiple gods for food. But some of the more conspicuous fruits, pretty much any fruit can be related to female organs, like particularly of the sexual variety. Mm. So, and as well as, like, just apples. I think as fruits, when you think about what a fruit is, it's like, it is this flesh containing a seed or, you know, something that will eventually become the reproduction of the fruit. And so in that way, if you think of women from an incredibly narrow mind, women, classical female bodies are of that same variety. And that's incredibly transphobic of the people in the 1600s. But that idea that the woman carries the baby similar to the way that an apple carries a seed. So if you see a bowl of fruit that was made around the 1700s or even probably nowadays, because everything is still inspired by the classics, it's probably a lot more risque than you might think.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kat. Wow.
My pleasure.
Our pleasure. Well, on that art see note, I guess this has been this episode of Double Space. Thank you again, Jan, for joining us in studio. It was such a pleasure to have you on, very knowledgeable about food. So thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Excellent.
Woohoo! Yeah, so this is Tintin and
Kat.
And
be sure to follow us on Instagram. We're at Double Space Show, all one word. We're also on Twitter. I don't know what our handle is, but look us up. Find it under me. I don't know. We also are, all of our broadcasts are on CITR.ca under Double Space. They should all be there. And we're probably going to be coming to iTunes soon. So sit still for that.
Wahoo.
Woo.
All right. Thank you for listening.
Bye now.
Oh! Oh, yes! Yeah, yeah!
You're listening to C.